This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, Barry Decker, president of Decent Energy, Inc., joins host Richard Mabian. But first, I'm Naturally with your headline news. EcoWatch.com reports, in another legal blow to Monsanto, India's Supreme Court on Monday refused to stay the Delhi High Court's ruling that the seed giant cannot claim patents for Bolgard and Bolgard 2, its genetically modified cotton seeds, in the country. Monsanto first introduced its GM technology in India in 1995. Today, more than 90% of the country's cotton crop is genetically modified. These crops have been inserted with a pest-resistant toxin called BT. Indian environmentalist Vandana Shiva, who is known for her fierce activism against corporate patent on seeds, called the top court's move a major victory that opens the door, quote, to make Monsanto pay for trapping farmers in debt by extracting illegal royalties on BT cotton, end quote. E360.yale.edu reports, the number of people in the United States infected by mosquito, tick, and flea-transmitted diseases have tripled, increasing from 27,388 cases in 2004 to 96,075 in 2016, according to a new report from the Centers for Disease Control. Since 2004, 9 insect-borne diseases have also been discovered or introduced into the U.S., 7 of which are carried by ticks. The new report does not mention climate change or global warming, but it was told to Reuters that warmer, shorter winters have helped boost the populations of ticks, mosquitoes, and other disease-carrying insects in recent years. In addition, increasing summer temperatures and heavy rain events that leave behind standing pools of water encourage mosquito breeding. Other factors include increases in the number of people traveling internationally, suburban reforestation, and lack of new vaccines being developed. EurekaAlert.org reports, temperature fluctuations that are amplified by climate change will hit the world's poorest countries hardest, new research suggests. For every degree of global warming, the study suggests temperature variability will increase by up to 15% in southern Africa and Amazonia, up to 10% in the Sahel, India, and Southeast Asia. Meanwhile, countries outside the tropics, many of which are richer countries that have contributed most to climate change, should see a decrease in temperature variability. The study also reveals that most of the increased temperature fluctuations in the tropics are associated with droughts, an extra threat to food and water supplies. Although climate variability has been studied extensively by climate scientists, the fact that climate variability is going to change has received little attention in fields investigating the impacts of climate change. And finally, ENN.com reports, when people are out and about, they leave plumes of chemicals behind them, from both car tailpipes and the products they put on their skin and hair. In fact, emissions of siloxane, a common ingredient in shampoos, lotions, and deodorants, are comparable in magnitude to the emissions of major components of vehicle exhaust, such as benzene, from rush hour traffic in Boulder, Colorado, according to a new CIRES and NOAA study. This work, published in the journal Environmental Science and Technology, is in line with other recent findings that chemical emissions from personal care products can contribute significantly to urban air pollution. D5 siloxane is added to personal care products like shampoos and lotions to give them a smooth, silky feeling. Siloxane belongs to a class of chemicals called volatile organic compounds, or VOCs. Once applied, they evaporate quickly. In the air, sunlight can trigger those VOCs to react with nitrogen oxides and other compounds to form ozone and particulate matter, two types of pollution that are regulated because of their effects on air quality and human health. And that's all for the news.
Good evening. This is Richard Mabian, and I'm glad you're here, and we'll get this show started. Thank you, Naturally, for the news. We appreciate that. You know, I've been having this series of things we've been doing. First of all, boy, can you believe that weather out there? Boy, we went from plain, simple nothing to It's like we're in the middle of a desert now. It's unbelievably hot. Can't hardly believe it. And I finally got my yard cut. My neighbors were ready to put me out because I hadn't been able to get it done because of weather and time. And I had those dandelions that was sticking all up in my yard. And so I finally got it cut yesterday. You know, we've been having these shows, and I've been bringing people in. We've been kind of reviewing where we've gone in the last 10 years. It's 2008, 2018. And I decided I would start inviting people on who I've been knowing during that period of time, and we'd talk about what it was they had done and where they are now. And I have a good one for you tonight. I mean, I'll give him his intro. He wondered how I was going to introduce him, and I told him, you really have to introduce yourself. But when I first went into the business and started the Breaking the Silence Conference, that was back, and actually it was 2007, so that gives you an idea how long I've been knowing this guy. And the one thing that I realized was, if you go to a group of people, even some of you listening out there, and I'm going to give out a number here in a second, because this is definitely one, if you want to call in, you should. I would ask you, how many of you have actually in your lifetime touched the solar panel? And it's always, it was amazing to me in 2007 how few people had touched the solar panel. And when I asked that question today in 2018, it's still amazing to me, as much as solar energy is talked about, how few people out there have had a chance to actually touch a solar panel. So my guest tonight is my solar person. He became my solar person back there in 2007. He would come to the conference and he would set up a solar panel on his display on a Friday evening at 5 o'clock, and boy, by Sunday at noon, he had fingerprints all over that solar panel. People were just touching it, and you could see how amazing they were to it and stuff. So, Barry, I'm going to have you introduce yourself. Tell them where you're at. Tell them about your company.
Richard, thank you. You know, I think the best way you could introduce me is as a friend.
Yes.
And I've taken a lot of joy in getting to visit with you a lot lately. You know, we've got some good things that we're working on. But, I've done a lot in terms of energy efficiency.
Give me your name.
So my name is Barry Dicker, and I'm the president of Decent Energy, Inc. Yeah. We are a renewable energy and energy efficiency solution provider. And I guess what I would say is we knit together the energy efficiency and the renewables. You know, solar can't do it alone. Solar needs to be put in a position to win, whether it's high-efficiency HVAC or building shell improvements or dealing with internal air quality concerns. There are a lot of things that need to go on in addition to the solar. And so that's what I've been doing since 2008.
Right. Now, he set the stage. Here's your number, 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. 5534. We're not going to sit here and try to sell you anything. We're sitting here making the energy renewable world available to you.
Can we sell them on taking action?
Now, we can sell you on taking action. Now I'm hoping those people who are interested and would like to take action are the ones that will call, because I know you got questions. And so here's the person who you can ask those questions to and get some kind of answer or some kind of reference to where that question could be answered. So again, that number is 816-931-5534. Okay, here we go. What would you say if I walked up to you and said, okay, I got a concern about renewable energy, how would you begin that conversation with me?
Do you like it warm in the winter?
Yeah.
Do you like it cool in the summer?
Yeah.
Do you like to breathe clean air?
Yes.
Do you like your kids to have clean water?
Yes.
All right. So you ought to be supporting energy efficiency and renewable energy, because all of those things are a byproduct of renewables and efficiency. But Richard, just to wrap up on the introduction, one of the questions that I got at the Breaking the Silence conference back in 2008 and 2009 was, well, what's decent energy? Or what's indecent energy?
And we got a call.
Okay.
So hold that. Hold that thought. Caller, you're on the air. Will you tell us what part of the city you're calling from, please, and your first name?
Yeah, I'm in Overland Park, and my first name's Burke.
Okay, Burke?
Yeah, B-U-R-K. You got it, man. Thanks.
All right. Well, Burke, what's your question?
What can somebody who doesn't own property, somebody in a rental situation, do to reduce the impact of energy usage? Is there anything beyond just like unplugging your devices, making sure the lights are off, like any battery technology? What kind of affordable alternative energy options exist for someone who doesn't own property on a bigger scale than just keeping stuff unplugged?
Burke, that's a great question. So let's start with the energy efficiency measures first, and then let's talk about renewables and how, as a renter, you can participate in renewable energy. So there are some things that even a renter can do. I'm assuming you said you're in an apartment?
Yeah, I am now. Okay. Former homeowner, but circumstances being as they are, I'm going to plan on being a renter for the foreseeable future and want to know how I can, be a little greener.
Right. So there are a few things that you can do that are really pretty accessible. Changing out your incandescent light bulbs for LEDs, if possible, if that hasn't been done. That's a good request for a landlord when you're moving in. Hey, you're going to change these out to LEDs, right? And, just as a side note, Burke, when folks like you ask questions about energy efficiency, when they're going through the rental application process, that really puts some pressure on landlords to understand that the marketability of their product depends upon doing the right thing here, okay? Helping you in terms of your indoor air quality and your savings. Because at the end of the day, if you're forced to choose between paying your utility bills and paying your rent, what are you going to choose? Right. So that's going to segue into a later part of our discussion. But I would say, let's make sure that furnace filter is clean. Let's change that quarterly. Let's make sure that there is no air gap between the furnace filter and the ductwork, because you get a lot of dust getting into the air that way. It's what's called a bypass, and it can severely degrade the efficiency of your heating and cooling. You can use a smart thermostat. That's something that even if you buy it yourself, you could take it with you when you move to your own home at some point. And paying attention to carbon monoxide. One of the things that we think about when we're dealing with energy efficiency and renewables is we overlook the importance of indoor air quality. So I have to share with you that sadly I've been in homes where people were intent upon putting solar on the roof, but they had a furnace flue that was rotted out and carbon monoxide spilling into the residence. So that's not good for anybody, right? So first things first. But from the standpoint of renewables, there are increasingly a number of communities where, such as Unified Government, where with BPU, where you are able to opt into a community solar program. And so the nice thing about community solar or other community renewable energy projects is that it eliminates this barrier or hurdle that folks like you face in terms of not having a property you own. I'll share with you personally, I own my house, but it's not particularly good for solar electric. It's very heavily shaded, and it would work for solar thermal, but not solar electric. So what community solar allows us to do is to basically pool a good site, very often with utility sponsorship, and it eliminates all of the hassle of the interconnection of your panel with the electric utility system. It's handled on a centralized basis by the utility, and it's probably a little bit more cost effective to do things that way. So those
and the utilities, the local utilities are on board with these things. I mean, how do you go about that process?
So if your local utility is not on board in your area, that is a great thing for you to ask them about. And it's also a great, and the energy efficiency piece is a great thing for you to ask a prospective landlord about. I'll share with you that I retrofitted a rental property to be as energy efficient as possible. And when I was showing that property, it was remarkable to me how people got really hung up about an extra $20 or $30 a month in terms of rent, but yet they had absolutely no idea what they were paying in terms of utility bills. Was it
right.
on average, right? So what it gets down to is not total cost of ownership, but total cost of occupancy. And so that's something that folks like yourself can really emphasize with their landlords. You know, we want a good quality housing stock, and we want a lower total cost of ownership or total cost of occupancy. I keep saying ownership because I want to get you back into ownership, Bert. I'm rooting for you.
Well, Bert,
I appreciate that. Thanks for the help. I really appreciate you guys taking my call.
Oh yes, absolutely. Sir. Thank you for calling in, Bert, and continue listening to us. I also want to say to you as you get off the line that check to see. I'm not for sure about Kansas City Power and Light. I don't know who you have for your utility company, but if I know Kansas City Power and Light has a certain portion of Overland Park, and then you have
there's West Star.
West Star is out there too, and they're supposed to be trying to combine. But Kansas City Power and Light has a heck of a energy efficiency program, but I don't know if they use it for rental services. So that might be something you might want to check to see. So thank you.
I'll do it. Thanks, guys. Yes, sir. I'll get off the line and let you get the next caller, but I really appreciate it, and I'll check in on that. And I'm still going to be listening, so any more suggestions you got, I'm all ears.
All right, sir. Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Bert. Let me get that number out one more time. That's 816-931-5534, 816-931-5514. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
A new book argues that anti-Muslim sentiment in America is not a new phenomena.
What we know now is Islamophobia today is centuries old, not only stereotyping, not only culture, but very much law and policy.
We learn about the long roots of American Islamophobia on the next Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right after Link's Mix.
76 million strong, the baby boomers were once America's most populous generation. They have dominated American culture, lifestyle, and politics for the last 30 years. But here come the millennials, outnumbering the boomers by more than 10 million. On this week's All Souls Forum, Linda Johnson and Camila Hewitt DeRosset characterize this new generation and predict what the future might look like as they come of age and begin to lead our country. Join us Wednesday evenings at 6 p.m. here at 90.1 FM, KKFI.
Easy to install, effective way to save water and money on this CurrentCast. Most old technologies fade into obscurity, but the humble rain barrel is making a splashy comeback. Why? Because it's an old-fashioned idea that still works. While it's not practical in parts of the country with minimal precipitation, it's the perfect solution for areas with sporadic rain. The barrel collects the water that usually pours down your gutters and into storm drains. Then you can use it during dry spells for things like washing a car or watering plants. Rain barrels are no longer a humdrum system of yesteryear. They're useful, efficient, easy to install, and there are many designs available to complement your landscaping. With a rain barrel under your gutter's downspout, you can save hundreds of gallons of water that would otherwise go down the drain. CurrentCast is produced in partnership with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
All right, I'm back again, and once again, I'm going to throw out that number, 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. Give us a call if you got a concern.
So, Richard, one of the things I was touching on as that call was coming in was our name, Decent Energy, and there are a couple things I'm trying to get at with that that lead us into second part of our discussion here. One is the importance of decentralized or distributed generation.
Okay.
A lot of energy sources, essentially an internet of energy.
And now that you've thrown that term out there, you want to explain distributed generation?
Well, it's like the internet in that it's not one big computer. There are a lot of different sources and uses. And I think that could be a whole program in and of itself.
Right.
But what I really want to touch on is the second part of what we were getting at in naming the company. And that's a need to contribute to this environmental commons. And decent in terms of a minimum standard of accountability and corporate citizenship as a business. Businesses, in my view, are responsible for contributing to our social, economic, and environmental well-being. And there are other businesses that believe the same way. And so the way that we've been expressing that, or one of the ways, and this comes back to one of the solar air heat collectors that I brought over to the building, Breaking the Silence conference. We got partnered up with a tax-exempt nonprofit out of Minnesota back in 2008, and they were working on fuel poverty.
Okay.
And come to learn, this is a huge problem in the Kansas City metro area. And it's important, especially for people that are renting. We don't think about utility expense having a regressive impact, or it's essentially a regressive tax on many of us, especially those of us that rent. There are some stats that come out from a Health and Human Services study in 2009 that suggests that low-income households have to spend twice as much of their income on utility expense over average, and folks that are above average in income are spending half of the average. So what it comes down to is that your low-income folks are spending four times as much, okay, of their disposable income. This is a gross generalization, but it goes to the problem. So going back to my friends from Minnesota, they were producing this solar air heat collector, the proceeds of which were going to pay for getting people out of fuel poverty. They were working one family at a time, giving these families a solar air heating system, and they had structured things with the Minnesota Department of Commerce in a way that the family was going to give up its fuel subsidy entitlement, and there's some names there that we'll get into, but basically it was a trade. Instead of a handout for paying a fossil fuel bill each and every year, it was a hand up towards participating in an economy built on energy efficiency and renewable energy.
So that makes sense to me. And I think that kind of feeds into what the Monsignor is talking about, because when he's been on here and also when we met with him, he has this thing and concern about why we aren't doing more with solar in the low-income communities. So if I'm hearing you correctly, they have a fuel subsidy. I don't think people are familiar with, because I don't know where it is, but they have a fuel subsidy for low-income folks somewhere.
Right.
I guess I'm not low income enough to know about it, so I don't get it.
I'd like it to be a situation where none of us are low income enough. I think
So if I'm hearing you, so when it comes to their bills, the certain portion of it's being paid for by the utility, by the government?
So these are federal funds,
okay.
And the program across the country is known as LIHEAP, LIHEAP. And it's a little bit of a misnomer. It stands for Low Income Heat Energy Assistance Program.
Okay. So they, instead of that money, instead of them having that particular money for that, they're using that money to install some type of renewable energy in their home by home. And that way, the cost factors for that family ends up being approximately what it would have been if, in fact, they were paying that low income, whatever it is, to the utilities remaining amount to the homeowner.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Exactly.
Like that.
In that pilot, they were essentially capitalizing this annual fuel subsidy expense and turning that expense into an asset. And there are a couple of other flavors of it. That money could be used to pay for a low-income family's subscription to a community solar farm.
Okay.
Right? So there are situations where a for-profit community solar developer might have an interest in working with some advocacy groups to build in an LMI or low to moderate income carve out so that it makes it a little bit easier for folks to get through that upfront hurdle and participate in a community solar project. But the just coming back to LIHEAP, I think the average in terms of the local area is a max of $800 a year for heating and $300 for cooling in Missouri. And it's important to note that while this is a federal program, just because you qualify from an income guideline standpoint doesn't mean that you're actually going to get the subsidy. Right? There's a waiting list. In many cases. And last I checked, and this is quite a number of years ago, Missouri had a markedly lower rate of eligible families actually receiving the subsidy than other states like Iowa and Minnesota.
Did you say 800 a year?
Yeah, so 800 on the heating and 300 on the cooling.
Oh yeah, well, 800 a year.
That helps.
$1,100 a year going towards your utility bills.
Right, but going back to that example of that property that I retrofit for energy efficiency, the utility bills on that before that house went into foreclosure with the prior owner. Those were around $4,000 a year.
Yeah.
And it had lost the air conditioner each of the two summers preceding it going into foreclosure. So that $800 helps, but you know, when you're dealing with folks that are choosing between tuition for community college, rent, food, health care, I mean, it's a significant burden.
Yeah, I'm sitting there thinking in terms, I would say, that I know for a fact many of the folks who live in the inner cities can find themselves paying anywhere from $400 to $500 a month for utility bills. That's a fact. Not necessarily because they're using an excessive amount of energy as much as the homes that they're living in are far from being energy efficient. You know, you got crack foundations, you have all kind of circumstances that make it real difficult for you to be able to close up those air holes and stuff.
You know?
So we're still dealing with an issue. I think you saying that makes me realize how serious this problem is for us to be concentrating on moving toward solar. And even then, for my program last week with BPU, we're talking about during the sunny times. You know, there's a period where you don't have the sun. And I know this is all still relatively new as far as this development is concerned. Do you think in time, 20 years from now, we could have reached a point where they would have figured out how to be able to cause a solar panel home to be able to sufficiently cover its expense throughout 12 months?
Sure. I mean, when you factor in energy efficiency as well, I mean, very often it's far more cost effective. I'll give you an example. There is a blower retrofit, you know, that we've worked in the past where the payback, simple payback, which isn't a great measure, but even still, it's 2 years. Okay. And we're not going to mention products or prices because I know that's against the rules. But the thing I wanted to come back to around the fuel subsidy is there are situations where some of those homes with holes in them and with inadequate insulation are visited by folks from the weatherization program.
Right.
And there are programs to help weatherize and make those homes more energy efficient.
I know they're still around. Let me give out the number one more time, 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. How much are the energy efficiency program, the weatherization program, still being utilized?
Well, they are being utilized, and the funding for LIHEAP has increased slowly over the past number of years. But where I was going was that there are some circumstances where, even if there's going to be weatherization before a fuel subsidy, there are some homes that just can't accept weatherization. So, for example, if the home has vermiculite, all right, there's an exclusion, okay?
Yeah.
So the CAP, or the Community Action Program, that does the income certification may very well have the resources to help out, you know, this family, but they just don't have the tool. And that's where participating in a community solar program, you using a carve out, can be an effective way of helping everybody get where they're going. Those weatherization programs are being, you know, used, but you know, the other thing that I think is really telling, Richard, is that the number of our vets, and I know that you're a vet, who are participating in the LIHEAP program has increased markedly over the last 10 years. Okay,
is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's good that they're
able to participate, but is that a problem that we're having?
I think it's a problem for any of our people,
right?
To be forced with the choice of, do I feed my kid?
Right.
Do I send my kid, you know, to help him with community college? You know, do I pay my auto insurance? Do I pay my mortgage? Do I pay my rent? You know, these are questions that we don't want our neighbors to have to face. And, you know, there are some challenges that we can meet and come up with some answers. And so this organization, REAL, that we've been working with for about 10 years ended up evolving its approach from going house by house to starting to work with community solar.
Okay.
And in fact, as you pointed out a couple of weeks back, there is actually a Department of Energy Solar in Your Community Challenge, all right, that's occurring right now. And my friends at REAL created a team, CS4CA, Community Solar for Community Action, where they are promoting these low to moderate income carve-outs within a for-profit development. You know, it's hard enough to get a for-profit community solar farm developed. I mean, there's issues of getting the land and, you know, working with the utility and working through site issues or engineering at times. And so the private developers aren't necessarily the best ones to be, they don't have the best resources to help them work through some of these public policy things that really go to our ability to sustain the commons, right? To give back so that, you know, we're all able to take, you know, what we need from it a little bit more easily. And so the CS4CA team is something that you and I are working with.
Right.
We're starting to work with in approaching some of these community solar farms around the possibility of helping them do their marketing, right? And helping to make their subscription offerings a little bit more accessible.
Okay, so the subscription, well, we had BPU on last week, so it's similar to what they were talking about, right?
Right.
Where people renting these solar panels, and is there a distance from a solar farm that becomes an issue? What's the distance?
No, and this is the point that Patrice Townsend was making you know, last week, is that one of the advantages, you know, like in our caller situation, is there are people who don't have access to a site, or if they do have access to a site, it's too far. And so through virtual net metering, which is basically giving, in essence, giving the homeowner or the renter or the participant, the community action agency, a bill credit, that eliminates the necessity to actually connect wires. Okay, dollars are, you know, ones and zeros are easy to move, okay. Right? So if we know that we are going to credit your bill with BPU for 4 apples yeah. worth of electricity usage, right. You know, it's easy for the cap to credit your account because it's purchased that subscription for you.
I got to explain
year.
The apples. For those of you who weren't listening last week when I was making a point, I used apples as far as the dollar amounts, because, you know, this is community radio and we watch what we're doing. But anyhow, it was like if you had 10 apples and you had a savings, how much of that savings would be recorded as far as apples? And when you came in today, you said it'd be like 4 apples. So that lets you know what having this program you're talking about would do for an average person's utility bill. And anytime you could have that kind of savings, I think that's a plus. What is getting me is that the industry itself, this 10-year thing we've been involved with, evolves, and it's all still an education. I think it's still at an education point, even though now we're starting to get more businesses involved in installing solar or working with solar, but there still seems to be majors that are the utility company, the solar company that others are working with. Is that what I'm seeing? I'm trying to get a picture of how it's going out there in the industry itself.
Yes, so there are a class of private developers that are doing a lot of the community solar development, and there are, you know, developers that have direct deals with the utilities where there isn't, the utility is off-taking the solar power, but there isn't a subscription available. There are some states where there isn't a particular limit on how many subscriptions or shares in a renewable energy project are available. You just opt in for an extra cent or two per kilowatt hour to get green power. Okay. And whether it's wind or, you know, solar or whatever, it's they manage the portfolio because that's one of the things that utilities need to do. They need to juggle the time of use with the sources of the electricity. Right. And that's where energy efficiency is really a tremendous ally. The sun only shines, you know, at certain times of the day.
Right.
And we tend
right.
to use our
right.
air conditioning on a hot, muggy July afternoon between 4 and 6. And, you know, that's not when the sun is the brightest. So the utilities have legitimate concerns around how to integrate renewable energy with the existing grid infrastructure, which in many cases is antiquated, but it's evolving, and those efficiency measures really help tremendously.
Okay, you know, now that you're talking about the times of days that we do things, I just want to reiterate the thought on peak use or peak. What's kind of explained there, what that means.
Sure, and that goes to the concept that I was explaining, is there are times of day when most people or more people are using electricity and using electricity more heavily than at other times. And so one of the beautiful things about KCPL's initiative with installing charging stations around the metro area. Mm-hmm. We've got close to 1,000 electric vehicle charging stations. A lot of those charging stations are geared towards the electricity being consumed at night, which is not a peak time. And it's a time when there is plenty of generation.
Wait a minute now. Those places that I'm seeing out here on the streets and in parking lots where people work, that you come in and plug your car in, you're saying that they recharge them at night? Is that what they're doing?
Well, what it's doing is it's encouraging a pattern of consumption that tends to work well for the utility.
Okay.
Right? When people get used to recharging an electric vehicle – that's something that they're going to tend to do on an off-peak basis.
Okay, we got to take our next cigar's other break, and when I come back, I want to pick up from there about how what they were saying 10 years ago. All right, folks, we're taking another break. Be with you in just a second.
Did you know that you can donate that unwanted car, boat, truck, or motorcycle to KKFI Radio and get a tax deduction for your donation? Find out more by calling KKFI at 816-931-3122. This is Joe Martin from Kansas City, a volunteer for 90.1 FM KKFI, my community radio station.
The Jackson County Bar Association presents Law 101. Free legal classes taught by judges and licensed attorneys. Classes are from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Greg Kleiss Community Center, 1600 John Buck O'Neill Way, Kansas City, Missouri. The next class is May 9th on personal injury and navigating insurance claims. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Robert and Donna Challender live on a small inlet near Little Egg Harbor, not far from the Jersey Shore. They dreamed of buying a retirement home overlooking the ocean, where they could sit on their porch and watch their grandkids play in the sand.
The beach represented a little bit of paradise, maybe.
But everything changed in 2012, after Superstorm Sandy.
We came back the next day, and there was all sorts of debris. We had somebody else's floating dock in our backyard.
Challender says he already knew that global warming is making seas rise and increasing the risks of extreme weather. But after Sandy, he started to reckon with it in a new way. He went to town meetings and saw maps showing how rising seas will likely impact the Jersey shoreline.
Studies are predicting that by 2050, the Atlantic Ocean here will be 1.5 feet higher, and it was devastating to see that. So we will not buy a beach house, especially in New Jersey.
The Challengers are now working on a new retirement plan. They still love the Jersey Shore, but as the seas rise, it no longer looks like paradise. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
All right, this is Richard Mabian, and I'm back here with my guest, Barry Diker, with Decent Energy. Is it Decent
Energy? Yeah, Decent Energy.
Decent Energy, and we're talking about renewable, the various forms of it that's out there nowadays. I was going to mention that when you were talking about the using the battery chargers at off-peak hours. I remember when we were just getting started in this back in 2008, they would recommend people wash their clothes at night instead of washing them during the middle of the day, during right. the peak hours, because it uses up so much energy to do it. So, I mean, like that guy that called in about what can I do in my apartment to save my costs, I still think there's a lot. They ended up calling them low-hanging fruit, but there's still a lot of things you yourself can do to help keep your costs down. And that's one out there. I just thought I'd throw it back out again because you had mentioned that, and washing clothes is a way that you can really cut down on the usage to the energy company, and they charge based on their usage, rate that you're receiving.
Not exactly. Okay. So what you're getting at, Richard, is referred to as time of use or time of use tariff. Tariff is just a rate schedule. And there are parts of the country where there is time of use based billing. So if you go home, you're one of those areas, and you go home in July, you know, at 4 p.m. and you crank up the AC, you know, you're going to pay, you know, extra at that point. That is not our system in either Kansas or Missouri at this point. There are, though, time of use factors for businesses, right? So businesses and office buildings and industry will pay based on time of use. And from the standpoint of helping the utility help us, yeah, it's good to reduce peak consumption by scheduling heavy uses like laundry at other times of the day. Absolutely. But you keep mentioning 2008, Richard, and one of the things that was sort of a hallmark for me of 2008 and this discussion around solar and community and renewable energy. Back in 2008 or 2009, the Kansas Corporation Commission held a series of roundtables or educational events, and they did one on wind and they did one on solar, and they brought in a bunch of, experts in terms of some of the transmission difficulties associated with onboarding renewables onto the grid at the time. And I remember that at one of the meetings, Gal, raised an issue of solar co-ops and why we weren't doing more in terms of investigating the effectiveness of solar co-ops. And I'm sad to say that at the time, she got a lot of snickers. Okay. And, to me, it made perfect sense. And so when you talk about, okay, in a few years, is it going to be feasible for us to be off-grid? Absolutely. Okay. In view of where we've come from 2008 and snickering at the woman for raising the issue of solar co-ops to today, where we've got all sorts of community solar installs going in, especially around Missouri. There's Independence Power and Light. Has got one that's worth mentioning.
You got to explain this co-op, because co-op to me, I think in terms of co-op ghost groceries where people participated, work, and they all had a saving. So what?
So, a co-op can be used by producers that are all producing in the same industry. There were a bunch of lumber or furniture manufacturers in the Northwest that were organized as co-ops over the years. A lot of the cranberry farmers organized themselves as co-ops. There are grocery co-ops. We have a lot of utility co-ops in Kansas and Missouri. Tremendous number. If you look at the number of utilities across Missouri, a great number of them are munis or electric co-ops. And what a co-op is basically a buying or producing organization where there's a distribution based on how much business you do with the entity. Okay, so it's there are some mutual insurance companies as well that are co-ops. So anybody who's got a mutual insurer, that's a co-op too. So they're all over the place.
So is there savings in co-ops? Because I think in terms of the individual. I mean, with utilities or utilities.
Yeah,
okay? But how does that become a benefit for the consumer?
So it would produce basically the same result that Patrice was describing with you're getting four apples back. Okay. Right? It's whether you're getting the four apples as a bill credit or whether you're getting as a patronage distribution or whether you're getting it, under some sort of getting a benefit under a lease. There are a whole variety of different ways. Or there's a subscription that's purchased, on your behalf by a community action program. All sorts of ways to do it. But where I was going was just the sea change or difference between, the attitude towards a shared funding and purchase and development of a renewable resource and then and where we are today, where it is mainstream, right, and where we're going to be in another 10 years.
Okay, you talk about, tell me about Independence. How does Independence work? And I live out in Independence, and I want to get engaged with their program. What is that?
So I believe that the Independence program is marketed by MC Power, which is some good people over there, and they're the developer. They've done a lot of community solar work. And I believe that in Independence, the ratepayer signs up to pay a little bit extra on their bill. And you can call Independence Power and Light, and I'm sure they or MC Power can tell you about the specifics. It's not something that I've memorized, but it's okay, so it's there.
They pay extra on their bill, and what do they receive?
So they're getting a bill credit.
A big credit?
A bill credit. So they're getting an offset. So just to come back to our example from last week, Patrice was estimating that the average BPU rate payer was burning between 950 and 1,000 kilowatt hours per month.
Right.
Okay. So let's just make the math easy and say, you know, that it's 1,000 kilowatt hours. Well, four apples worth would be 400 kilowatt hours. So there would be a credit.
I want to throw that number out one more time before we run out. We just got probably about 3 minutes left, just in case someone out there had some dying question they wanted to ask. The number is 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. I think that I would like to have a session where we would just sit and talk about that aspect of it, because I think there's a need for people to get an understanding of that.
Right. The DOE Solar in Your Community Challenge is an important opportunity that's going to go away come
DOE?
September. Yeah, Department of Energy.
Okay.
Yeah, and so there's a short-term opportunity for us to use some of those resources to establish some new models and help our neighbors.
Okay. Now, how would we go about doing it?
Well, you got an email.
Okay.
All right. And I've got an email. My email is bmd@decentenergy.com. Okay. And Richard, what's your email?
Mine is rmabian@sbcglobal.net. Or they can also contact us here at the station.
Exactly.
And that way they can get us on our website here at the station.
Maybe we can put up an email specifically for this thread.
Right, for that. I think that just sitting here listening to you and talking shows the extent of concerns and questions that people could have about this. And whether it's they're calling or not, I know they're listening. And this is an area where we're going. We have to make a decision here, and it scares you. People not for sure what they're getting into. The year thing is a problem. A person hears that you'll have this for 25 years, and then what? You know, I have a guy that's 72 that said, I don't know if I got 25 years, so why should I buy into it? And I think some of those common kind of conversations need to be addressed.
Yeah, and, you know, it's better to do something and get a program going and make adjustments than not do anything at all. So we're all adjusting.
All right, gang, I told you this was going to be that kind of conversation. Barry, I really appreciate you coming out.
Richard,
brother.
My friend, always a pleasure.
Yeah, and we'll be back again. I'm telling you,
I need you
to come in from time to time just so we can keep this kind of conversation going, and we can help educate the public. Like you said, we got to work together on this, and I want KKFI to be the go-to spot where we have people talking, even though you have a business that you're working with, and y'all look up Decent Energy and see all that Barry's about. I think you would appreciate that. But when I have him here, I'm going to have him here because of what we just got through doing. So take care. We'll see you the next time we're here. Thank you.
Susan Stover, PG, is Outreach Manager at the Kansas Geological Survey. She worked in water policy, water resource planning, and environmental remediation for the state of Kansas for 20 years before joining the survey in 2014. She will be speaking about the waters of Kansas, past, present, and future, hosted by the Sierra Club Topeka Group tomorrow, Tuesday, May 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, Topeka. Also tomorrow, Tuesday, May 8th at the Hallmark Visitor Center from 2:30 to 5 p.m., the Green Business Network hosts a viewing of the documentary Wasted, The Story of Food Waste, followed by a panel discussion highlighting what businesses are doing to curb food wasted at all points along the food chain here in Kansas City. Moderated by Cassandra Ford, Bridging the Gap's Business Recycling Program Manager at 2501 McGee at the Hallmark Visitor Center. You can find tickets at the link posted to our Eco Radio KC Facebook page. And on May 19th from 3:30 to 5 p.m., you can meet two local experts on insects and spiders at Love Bugs, a citizen science event, and learn how to be a citizen scientist of these often maligned creatures. While many people find bugs annoying and scary, insects and spiders are actually foundational to ecology. At this event, Betsy Betros and Linda Williams will share their experiences with studying, cataloging, and photographing insects and using online photo databases to share findings and learn from others. This is the first in a series of GreenWorks Kansas City Citizen Scientists event, where participants can learn about many opportunities to get involved in counting and cataloging creatures in the natural world. That's May 19th from 3:30 to 5 p.m., and we will post this event and all the events on our Eco Radio KC Facebook page.
As the caravan of Central American immigrants seeks asylum on our southern border, Trump stokes fear. But what's driving these people to flee their countries? Hear Karen Spring, human rights activist who has lived in Honduras for a decade, discuss the election fraud and repression of resistance, the political prisoners, and the U.S. role. Tuesday, May 8th at 7 p.m. at Rockhurst Community Center, 5401 Troost, Kansas City, Missouri. This message brought to you as a public service by KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome to World Ocean Radio. I'm Peter Neal, director of the World Ocean Observatory. Too often, ocean news is bad news. Stories of pollution, overfishing, sea level rise, and the consequences of extreme weather that added to comparable news regarding similar problems on land does little to uplift our spirits or a sense of optimism for the future. Following ocean news can frustrate, anger, and depress, and otherwise upset me. And why should I share such dark thoughts with you yet again? So here are some headlines taken from the March-April issue of Echo Magazine, a professional publication devoted to coastal and offshore environmental problems and technological response, exploring regulation, assessment, mitigation, and the restoration of ocean condition. Reading these headlines, I was struck by the positive aspect of so many of them. An aggregation of progressive engagement toward ocean solutions in the United States and around the world. Here are some of them. Connecticut issues offshore wind request for proposals. New Jersey governor signs order to promote offshore wind energy. California increases penalty for fishing in protected areas. Comeback of aquatic grasses in Chesapeake Bay. Opinion. Expand efforts to reduce marine plastic in Scotland. New map of flood risk area around San Francisco Bay. To protect Arctic, U.S. and Russia propose Bering Strait shipping routes. Self-driving robots create snapshots of ocean microbes. Scientists pinpoint how ocean acidification weakens coral skeletons. XPRIZE ocean discovery finalists announced. Accelerating unmanned ocean exploration, major storms, and community resilience. California drought cycles drive water districts to be as efficient as possible. Latest practices and uses in ocean and coastal citizen science. Simulation of environmental risk of Sanchi oil tanker contamination. Monitoring coral reef disease in Caribbean waters. Tracking mysterious marine mammals in the Arctic. Teaching science communication to children. When you read through this list, you see a full spectrum of technological and academic response to very specific challenges to ocean species, habitat, and processes. Examples of innovative applied engineering and artificial intelligence. Global partnerships and international collaborations to share capacity, funds, and access. And a commitment to serious investigation toward the sustainability of the natural resources, plant, animal, and human, in the ocean environment. This is all very good news. It provides hope through the expression of science, curiosity, and ingenuity to transcend the bad news of past indifference to and ignorance of the ocean world. That's our purpose at World Ocean Observatory, to foster optimism and to suggest solutions and to share that news far and wide amongst all the citizens of the ocean on Earth. We will discuss these issues and more in future editions of World Ocean Radio.
World Ocean Radio is distributed by the Public Radio Exchange and the Pacifica Network for use by college and community radio stations worldwide. Find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts and at worldoceanobservatory.org.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.